Are you looking for your next great read, but stumped on where to find it? Let me be your book fairy godmother. When you join Rhonda with a Book on Patreon for $5 a month, I will send you a personalized book recommendation, plus my All Things Bookish newsletter every month, and give you a shout out and plug your project here on the podcast. If you're on a budget, no worries. For only a dollar a month, you can get just the newsletter, which includes exclusive content not found on the blog, and a collection of links to articles, stories, and products book nerds will love, curated by yours truly. Go to patreon.com/rondawithabook to join. Thanks so much for your support, and as always, happy reading. Good day, friends, and welcome to the Rhonda with a Book podcast, where I, Rhonda, spill the tea on books. Not literally, of course. My guest today for this reader chat is Rachel Amber Bloom, who you may know from the Masks and Mayhem Real Play podcast, or from her writing or social media. Rachel is also a huge Jane Austen fan, so most of our conversation naturally drifted toward things of an Austen-related nature, but we also talked about Star Trek, superheroes, and our favorite childhood books, among other things. You'll be able to find links to the topics we discussed, plus a list of all the books we talked about, at rondawithabook.com. Please enjoy this reader chat. So I am joined today by writer and social media specialist and fellow Jane Austen fan, Rachel Amber Bloom. How are you today?
Good.
Good.
Good to finally be able to like speak to you.
Yeah.
As opposed to just like tweeting at each other.
Yeah, we've been like Twitter and TikTok friends for for a few months now, I think.
Yeah. It's always funny because people are like, oh, how long have you guys like followed each other on Twitter? And I was like, I have no idea.
Yeah, me neither.
Like,
I think I've kind of been like, I've seen like Drunk Austen retweet you sometimes. And I think that's where
I've like gotten to the point where I'm like, where it's funny because like back in the day I was like, I love Drunk Austen so much, and now I'm like weirdly friendly with both of them. And I was like, when did that happen?
I know, right? Like they follow me now. It's so like, I feel so important when so I did definitely want to, I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about with Jane Austen, but before we get into that, you also are on a podcast, Masks and Mayhem.
Yes. Masks and Mayhem is an actual play podcast. And it's,
okay.
We play the RPG Mutants and Mastermind, which is superhero based.
Okay.
And it's in the brainchild of my friend RC, who's the GM. He's had this superhero world in his head since he was like a kid, from what I've gathered. And so he's like wanted to actually do something with this world he's been building. And it's really fun. I play a character named Ruby, who has visual powers and goes by the superhero name Visual Aid, and is also a low-budget filmmaker on the side, and uses her powers for that, too.
I love that. So were you, like, into superheroes or comics at all?
Yeah, I would say more, I like comics a lot, but I didn't have easy access to them, so I probably more, because I'm a military brat and grew up overseas, so sometimes it wasn't super easy to get stuff like comics that you have to try to keep up with week to week. But superhero movies especially, because I'm also like a movie nerd as well.
Sure.
I mean, I've seen so much, I was talking about the other day to a friend, I was like, I've devoted so much of my life to the MCU that it's ridiculous.
Right. Who would you say is your favorite MCU or any other?
Superman. I think this might be a little basic, but Captain America.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
who can blame you? That's
as like he like it's like good morals, like interesting, and also look at Chris Evans.
Okay, fair point. Fair point. Yeah. Nice. I also really wanted to ask you about this. You're a Star Trek fan, right?
Yes. Like I'm a that very is big that Star Trek
putting
fan.
It? It's putting it lightly to say that you're.
Yeah, I mean, there's like. Well, they can't see this, but there's like a phaser sitting on this desk.
Oh, nice.
Like that. Ironically, I've been trying to read more of the Star Trek books, uh-huh. but there's so many of them okay. that it's like hard to know where to start.
Right. Yeah, it's like such a huge universe. I feel so.
Yeah.
Like I'm a Star Wars fan, and I started when I was, you know, like 8 years old. So I feel like yeah. I've had my life to get into it. So I feel really intimidated by like another huge universe like Star Trek. I'm like, where do I even start?
Fair. I would say the one really good thing about Star Trek is that because there's different series, there's different. I've told different friends different starting off points because I was like one friend. I was like, Janeway seems really cool. I was like, cool. Start with Voyager then if you okay. want to. Like, I would also say the new. I mean, there are, like in Star Wars, there are some gatekeepy Star Trek fans. Ignore them. Sure. ignore them. They're not great. But the newer stuff, I think, maybe lends itself more to people who aren't used to, like, watching 22 episodes of a TV show that are not super connected. Whereas the newer stuff, it's a lot more, like, serialized. I feel like I really like Star Trek Discovery.
Okay.
Yeah,
I've heard good things about that.
Yeah. Star Trek Picard, I really do like, but it's confusing because it's Star Trek Picard, a character that has, like 20 years of backstory.
Sure.
So it's like, and then...
Is it, like, self-referential at all, or...?
It can be. Like, there's stuff that comes up. They're like, well, why didn't... They'll, like, have to, like, be like, well, why didn't we go get this character and have to, like, come up with a reason... For, like, why it's not just everyone from, like, Next Generation that's on.
Okay.
But also, I'm also the fan of, like, if you like any part of Star Trek to me, you're a Star Trek fan. Like, you sure. don't just have to like the original, like, you also don't have to see, like, I actually haven't seen all of Star Trek. I have not seen all of Enterprise because there's an insane amount of it.
Right.
Like, I also really like Star Wars, but I haven't seen, like, every cartoon there is.
Sure, sure.
There's just a lot of Star Wars out
there's
there.
A, yeah, there's a lot. I feel like, wow. yeah, like, in a way, like, that's good because then kind of, like, there's something for everyone. So, like, if mm-hmm. you're really into books, like, there, yeah. well, like you said, like, there's Star Trek books. Comics, there's... video games, cartoon shows, yeah.
What's fun about the Star Trek books I've discovered is a lot of the audiobooks are narrated by the actors.
Oh, interesting.
So I was like, oh, that's fun because it's like actually like the character then, as opposed to like a lot of audiobooks. Sometimes I like listen to them and I was like, oh, that's not at all what I imagined their voice being like.
Sure. You said that you have read some of the Star Trek books or you haven't gotten to them yet?
I've read some of them.
Okay.
But there's... I mean, I will never read all of them. Sure. I don't know that that's possible. There's a lot. Like, I don't... They also... Star Trek works the rule that... like, the only thing considered canon is on screen. And so all the books are considered, like... Just, like, this non-canon. Could have happened. Okay. But, like, we're not going to keep track of them. Because there's too many. Okay. Like, one I just... I found it on Kindle. Was, like, there's one... Written by, I can't remember the name of it, but it's written by one of the actors from Deep Space Nine, Andy Robinson, mm-hmm. about his character, and there's based off, like, the notes he took when he was acting to, like, give himself a backstory.
Okay. That would be really interesting.
And I've heard that one's really good, so I recently got it on Kindle. So I'm probably going to read that one fairly soon, once I'm done with what I'm currently reading.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I don't get distracted by a fan fiction before that.
Right. Yeah, do you read a lot of fan fiction?
Yeah, I read some. I always get, like, either into a fandom that doesn't have any current fan fictions being made or, like, just doesn't have enough fan fiction.
Uh-huh.
Which, my thing for Jane Austen is everything but Pride and Prejudice, I think, doesn't have enough.
Sure.
I mean, Pride and Prejudice, like, I'm always good for Pride and Prejudice fic, but there's significantly more than everything else.
Yeah, that's, yeah, definitely.
Especially definitely Northanger Abbey. There's not enough Northanger Abbey fic.
There is not enough Northanger Abbey anything, in my opinion.
I know you agree. Northanger Abbey is in my top three Jane Austen books, and nice. I know the heroine that I am the most like is Catherine Morland.
Catherine would totally be like a diehard like Star Trek fan for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the, I'm sure you have since you love Northanger Abbey so much, but the Kate Morland Chronicles.
Yes, I love it.
I remember watching it and I'd be like, yes, this is exactly what a modern Catherine Morland is, and I love her so much.
Yeah, totally. Do you read any science fiction at all besides the Star Trek?
Yeah, I actually like 2 days ago finished a science fiction book. I finished Axiom's End by Lindsay Ellis.
Oh, I've heard of that one. Yeah.
Who's she's a pretty well-known like YouTuber.
Mm-hmm.
And I followed her for years and years, and so I was pretty excited when she wrote a book, which is funny. When I was reading it, I realized it had been, I don't think this entire like summer slash like quarantine, I'd realized I hadn't really read a book that wasn't a romance. When I was reading it, I was like, oh yeah, there are books with other plots.
Uh-huh.
But it was really good. It was like, not like, I love romance books, mm-hmm. obviously, but it was nice reading something that was like, oh yeah, a little different. But it was, it's really interesting. It's a alternate history of what, if first contact with aliens had happened in 2007. And so the mm-hmm. book is set in 2007. And so when, like, they're talking about the president and stuff, and they'll like reference it, and you realize, oh, it's Bush.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I've been really intrigued by that one. I'm sure at some point I'll try to pick it up. But
yeah, it's, I highly recommend it. She also, this is my favorite thing, there's, like, also, the main character's father is a, like, WikiLeaks guy, basically.
Oh, okay.
And so, she gets dragged into it, because everyone thinks, like, oh, because your dad's been having these conspiracy theories, and she doesn't have anything to do with her father. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, I have nothing to do with this, why am I getting dragged into this? This is great. She, there's some links in there, and if I suggest going to the links for a surprise, and I could say what the surprise is, because okay. it's not like a spoiler for the book. She did a, every link, if you go and Google it, you get Rickrolled. Which I was just like, ooh, is there like a surprise in the link? And then I was just like, oh, no, it's Rick Astley.
That's
okay.
That's pretty amazing.
That's
like the ultimate.
It's also so perfect for so perfect for a book set in 2007.
Yeah, because that's exactly what was going on in like the cultural mm-hmm. zeitgeist or whatever. That's really funny. What are some other books that you've read recently and that you really liked?
Because it came out today, I started the new Meg Cabot book that came out today.
Oh, okay.
Which, No Regrets, something. It's their second, it's one of her, like, adult series.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, they're not super adult, they're not YA.
Right.
That takes place in this, like, this little island off of Florida. And I like the, I read this a while ago when it came out, but I like the first one of that series as well, which was, like, set during a hurricane, and the main character is saving all the people's pets that have, like, were off. And so it's a lot of just following this cute couple going around saving animals.
Aww.
And I don't know a lot about the, because I'm like a chapter into the new one, mm-hmm. but it's a little, like a baby gets like abandoned in a library. And so that's like the librarian and the sheriff mm-hmm. are like trying to like find out what happened with the okay. baby.
And they fall in love.
I mean, I haven't got to the end of the book, but I've read other Meg Cabot books, so I'm pretty sure yes.
There's some romantic tension there.
Yeah. So far, they're at the, we're not sure if we like each other's people yet, and you're like, ah, yeah.
Ah, okay. So yeah, little Darcy and Elizabeth.
Yeah, little rival, like, I don't know, rivals to, like, lovers is always so good.
Yeah. Who doesn't love it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I
also read a book recently. I'm trying to remember. I think it's called What I Like About You.
Okay.
But it's it was a YA book about someone who has like a they're teenagers. It's YA. Mm-hmm. A book blog, and she moves and acts and finds out that her like online crush and online friend is in her new place, and she's kind of living a double life, and he's kind of falling for her in both places. So it's like,
oh, okay.
It was a, you've got they mail. Described it. Yeah, they described it as a love triangle with two people.
Oh, okay.
But one thing I really liked about it is it was really, really Jewish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and, like, oh, there was a lot, like, it also had a different, like, a bunch of characters had different, like, levels of, like, how religious they were, which mm-hmm. I am what I describe as Jew-ish. And also, okay. My dad's Catholic, my mom's Jewish, and I've kind of grew up with both, like, cultures, and but it's there's a lot more Christian / Catholic
oh yeah
stuff out there than like straight up these characters are super Jewish, as opposed to a side character mentions I actually celebrate Hanukkah as opposed to Christmas. So that was really, I didn't know that going in, because I just, someone had recommended it to me because they're like, you have online friends, this looks cute, and so it was a really pleasant surprise, and I was like, okay. Oh, I'm really relating to this.
Yeah, that's really neat. Do you have, like, sorry, I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but do you have, like, recommendations for books that you feel have really good Jewish representation?
That's, I think one of my problems is, so most of the books I read when I was young with, like, Jewish representation in them were all Holocaust books.
Right, yeah.
And so I've been trying to, like, seek out more, and I don't know, I, like, it's so much easier now with, like, easy access to the internet or mm-hmm. having a Kindle, because I, like I said earlier, I grew up on a military base. The book section was, like, of the, like, there was a library, which was great, but, like, the book section was, like, two shelves in the middle of the BX, and so it was really hard to sometimes, like, get books
sure.
that were, like, a little different. Mm-hmm. And so it's so much like so much easier now that I can be like, this sounds interesting, and just order it to my Kindle. Yeah, but that's something like I was like been like actively trying to like find more books with like good Jewish representation.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. Obviously, representation is important for everybody, but yeah, I think that's something that we don't often think about, as you know. Like having white privilege is obviously, you know, something that we're discussing more and more. But I think that like Christian privilege or religious privilege is something that isn't as discussed. So,
yeah, it's interesting for mine that I very much have white privilege. Mm-hmm. But it's weird also because I live in Texas, and I have been told multiple times that me or my brother are the only Jewish people have ever met.
Interesting.
And where I was like, we're not even, like, religious. Like,
right, yeah.
Like, I was like, that's weird. Yeah. And, like, I live, and I'm sure that's probably a little different if I lived somewhere more, I live in Austin, which is a city, but it's, like, actually a pretty small city mm-hmm. Compared to, like, Houston or Dallas, which I do think have bigger Jewish populations. But, and most of the people who say this are probably from, like, grew up in, like, smaller towns in Texas. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, that's like, that's so weird. Where are the Jewish people?
Yeah.
Where, as opposed to some place with, like the Northeast tends to, like, have a bigger population.
Sure.
Obviously. I'm trying to think of more that, like, aren't Holocaust books.
Yeah, same. I, like, all of the ones I can think of off the top of my head, they're all Holocaust.
I was like, obviously it's important to learn about the Holocaust, but also...
Right.
I would love to read some books with Jewish people that aren't bummers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, we don't want to just read books about Black people that are only about slavery, so, like, of course, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's... I had never actually thought specifically about that before, so I have some research of my own to do.
It's weird living, like, in an area where people, I think people always assume, and also because I do, like, celebrate Christmas, so mm-hmm. I understand why, sure. And then I'll do something, say something about Judaism, and people are like, wait, what? Like, And I was like, surprise.
That's funny. So switching gears just a little bit. Of course, Jane Austen. I feel like we're going to have a lot to discuss.
I will always talk about Jane Austen.
Oh, same. Absolutely.
It's good to find people like you so I don't drive other people crazy.
Right. Same kind of crazy as me. So you said Northanger Abbey's in your top three. So is it like number three?
Maybe. So it's my favorite book of all time is Emma.
Okay, nice.
And then I would say it goes between like Pride and Prejudice and Northanger Abbey.
Okay.
For me. But that is to say all the rest of them I love.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's hard to like rank them besides the fact that I know Emma's my favorite for a couple is that I really like mysteries. I really like mystery books. And I kind of read Emma as a mystery.
Oh, yeah.
In a lot of ways. And I think those elements really stood out to me. And I really like a friends to lovers story. So that helps. I feel like every time I read it, I catch something I didn't catch it like with the like surprises at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like every time I read it, I was just like, oh, that's what that weird scene with Frank Churchill was about.
Right.
Yeah, and I also, everyone had talked at Pride and Prejudice so much, and I had read Pride and Prejudice first, that I loved it, and I knew I would love it, and someone was like, and there are others, and then I read the others, and I was so surprised by how much I loved Emma.
Okay.
That I think, even that surprise, I think if you go into something not knowing you're gonna love it, and you love it, that, like, feeling of, like, is so much more, I feel.
Yeah.
It's the surprise of it is always so good.
Yeah, that's so interesting about Emma being a mystery novel because there's a couple different mysteries in there that you're kind of wondering about the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like who sent the piano forte?
Mm-hmm. Who Harriet is like talking about.
Right.
When she's like, I'm in love. And Emma's just like, ah, you're in love with Frank, because she can't deal with the idea she might be in love with Mr. Knightley. Uh-huh. Like, that's how I've always read that Emma maybe, in deep of her mind, knows that might be the case, but Emma's just like, nah, can't.
Nope.
Uh-uh. Does not compute.
Right. So, I know we kind of briefly had a Twitter discussion about this, but I'm curious about your thoughts on the 2020 Emma adaptation. How did you feel they did?
I love it a lot. I know some people were not as into the style like choices and like different choices that were made, but I love how different it is without, and in a way that's honestly not. It's very stylistic in a way I really liked, and it felt like it was going for its own style as opposed to being, like, trendy, I guess? That might not be the right word. But as opposed to, like, we're going to try to make the costumes look closer to modern clothing. No, the exact opposite. The clothing are, like, the ridiculous Regency collars. And the colors. Like, I love the 2005 Pride and Prejudice, but I think there was a trend in period dramas after that to go with a very beige color palette. And I love how colorful this version of Emma is, especially because Emma's rich. Emma would be like showing off the fact that she can afford all the colors. And I think it does a really good job of getting the story down without feeling like there's obviously a lot of stuff that's missing. But when you're watching the movie, it doesn't feel like those scenes. It doesn't feel like, oh, it doesn't make sense without those scenes. Whereas I've definitely watched movie adaptations of books where I was like, I'm glad I've read the book because otherwise I wouldn't know what's happening.
Right.
I love the music.
The music was great.
I bought the record of the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And my record player is currently broken. So but now I'm like, now I have to fix it so I can, like, so I'm not a ridiculous person who bought a record she can't play. I think you also really like it, right?
I do, yeah. I think we've actually discussed this, haven't we, about like how we rank all of the Emma adaptations?
Oh, I think we have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I put it at my number two Emma adaptation.
Was Clueless first? I remember yeah. correctly.
Yes, Clueless is number one. Yeah.
That's great. I think Clueless is such a classic. Clueless is honestly the best modern adaptation of anything I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Hands down.
Honestly, the only one modern adaptation that I've seen works so well on its own that people don't even realize that it's mm-hmm. like based off anything.
Yeah.
I love this. It might be tied for me for the BBC miniseries.
Okay.
But I also actually don't think it's fair to compare those because they're not actually the same medium.
Yeah.
Like yeah, a totally. Miniseries is a different medium than a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfair to compare something that had 2 hours to tell the same story as this thing had four.
Right. Yeah.
And it could be also there's a nostalgia for me for the 2009 Emma because I watched it so much that the DVD case of my DVD like broke.
Oh no.
And I had to super glue it back together. So that's yeah, I love that version. Like, so much. And yeah. My one thing, I would say to the BBC, is please release it on Blu-ray, because my DVD is starting to look not great on, like, my TV is getting too nice for that DVD.
Yeah, I do like the 2009 one a lot. I think it's a very, it reminds me a lot of, like, the comparison between, like, the 1995 Pride and Prejudice and the 2005 Pride and Prejudice. How
definitely.
There's like bitter internet wars about yeah. these adaptations, but they're really two completely different mediums. So
yeah. It'd be like if someone had to at some point make a movie of Game of Thrones and try to fit all of the plot, and then you compared it to a TV show that like took years. Yeah, I feel the same way about the two versions of Pride and Prejudice. I was like, they're both great, but mm-hmm. they're both very different because they have different, like, purposes.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And I also think the 2005 Pride and Prejudice is a great way to introduce people to Jane Austen because I love the 1995 miniseries, but it's almost 6 hours long.
Yeah, it's a commitment for sure.
Like, you've got to have your friend's trust to get them to be like, I want you to commit 6 hours.
Right. You've never read this author before, but here, watch a 6-hour, very detailed miniseries of this work.
I got a friend into Jane Austen by... I used to bring the 2005 the 2005 Pride and Prejudice to sleepovers a lot.
Okay, nice.
And my friend was having a sleepover, and the one I did a year-long research report on Jane Austen my sophomore year of high school. And so at some point, either my junior or senior year, someone was like, had found out that our other friend hadn't seen Pride and Prejudice, and she was like, Rachel, you have to have that, right? And I was like, yes. And she was like, cool, bring it. And so we brought it, and I was sitting next to my friend who hadn't seen it, and halfway through, she turned to me and she went, they end up together, right? Because I think I'll cry if they don't.
Oh.
And I was like, you'll be good. But then I was just like, if you like that, here is more. And I just got her. Her favorite actually ended up being Sense and Sensibility. And
oh, okay.
Like, ended up falling in love with the, like, Emma Thompson, like, Kate Winslet one.
Oh, yeah, that one's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've had a few friends as well who have been introduced to Jane Austen through the 2005 Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
And I can remember like several instances where I would like go over to a friend's house to watch it and I would be watching my friend the whole mm-hmm. time as she watches it.
I did that recently with an online friend because it's on Netflix now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we're like, great, we can just use Netflix Party. So much easier than trying to hit play at the same time, mm-hmm. which we have done in the past.
Yes.
I was actually introduced to Jane Austen mostly through that version of Sense and Sensibility because I was a really big Alan Rickman fan.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And was, like, watching everything he had, like, been in. And that's, I mean, as anyone in a fandom, I actually don't suggest just trying to watch everything an actor has been in, because I assure you they've been in some bad movies.
Oh, yeah.
That they had to take, because that's how their job. But Sense of Sensibility, I was like, oh, this is great. And then I ended up reading it and then doing decided to do a year-long research report on Jane Austen and didn't hate her by the end of it, unlike all of my other friends with whatever historical figures they chose.
So you basically, like, spent a year reading Jane Austen then?
That was my project. It was great. And then I was just, like, watch Jane Austen. Like, I was just watching Jane Austen documentaries all the time. And my parents were like, I guess it's for school. Like, and I was like, great for me.
That kind of reminds me, though, there's this book that came out recently that I just saw something about recently. The author only read Jane Austen novels for, like, several years, and then she wrote this memoir about it. Austen Years is what it's called, by Rachel Cohen. A memoir in 5 novels. So I wonder which novel she didn't read.
It's only 5 novels. That's a very good question.
Yeah. I feel like Northanger Abbey gets left out a lot.
Yeah.
So that's probably the one she didn't read.
I'm
just totally prejudging her.
I mean, that's what my thought was too. And I was like, oh, did she leave out Northanger Abbey? I was like, it's good, I promise.
And it's my favorite one.
I think the one thing that I've had to explain to some people is that some people have known, like, if they don't know what a gothic novel is, or, like, for the most part, they're just like, what's happening?
Right. Yeah.
I was like, it's a little bit of a parody of a book type of book that isn't super popular.
Right.
So, anymore. Which is, like, I think the 2007 version, I think it's 2007, mm-hmm. the one J.J. Field did a really good job of, like, showing you, like, what those mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I would say that's my... I do love, like, adore that version. I would say it's my favorite version of Northanger Abbey, but, like, there are only 2 movie versions, and the other one is insane.
So. Yes. Oh, my gosh, yes. I tried to watch it when I must have been, like, 17 when I tried to watch that one, and I could not make it through.
My library had it, again. And I saw that before the other one, because my library had that. And I was just like, actually, when I read that, I was like, do I not like Northanger Abbey? Is this movie just weird?
Right.
And I watched the other one. I was like, oh, that movie's just weird.
Yeah.
Then I don't. Okay. If you never got to the end of that movie, the last scene is so weird because he, like, appears out of nowhere in the fog and there's, like, saxophone.
Oh, okay.
Like, I appreciate that movie more now as an adult, which is like, these are such weird choices for this.
Right.
And, like, her, like, hair is so big.
It's from the 80s, right?
Yeah. I mean, it has to be. But he just comes off as real creepy.
Yeah.
Like.
And I remember thinking that, 1987. I remember thinking that I maybe watched about 30 minutes of it. But I remember thinking that he looks so old.
Yeah, and he does look really old.
And I was like, why did they pick this guy? Of course, I was 17 at the time, so everyone looked old. But
yeah,
I just was like, no, why? This is not Henry Tilney. What were they thinking?
A lot of adaptions of classic novels, they're like, let's lower that age difference a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I appreciate it. Oh, and I just remember from the 2009 Emma, they actually, for the most part, didn't lower the age difference on that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people, I guess, do not think Johnny Flynn looks his, like, almost 40.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just like, he's just an actor. He's good looking. Like,
right. And it's also, I think, because we're used to seeing Hollywood age differences that are, you know, 10 years, but the characters are supposed to be the same age.
Yeah. So, watching a movie where Emma Roberts and Hayden Christensen were supposed to be childhood, like, friends, and then, like,
but they're actually, like, 10 years apart.
Yeah, they're, like, 10 years apart. And I was like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, they can be love interest in the movie. I don't care about that. The idea that they grew up together, however.
Yeah.
I was like, so did he know her when she was, like, 4 and he was 14?
Yeah. But then I think I know what movie you're talking about, because, like, they actually show a flashback and they're 2 children and they look like they're the same age.
And I'm like,
as children.
Did he just, I remember I joked to a friend. I was like, did he just age really badly?
Yeah.
Like, I don't. I was like, there's no way these two people grew up together.
Right. Yeah. I don't remember what that movie is called, but I remember
Is it Little Italy?
Yeah.
I think so.
How Did This Get Made did an episode on it.
It oh, so I need to listen to that. It also helps that a lot of movie versions are made for a modern audience. Mm-hmm. And so they explain stuff that, like, Jane Austen wouldn't have because right. She's like, that's the way the world is. Like, every movie version of Pride and Prejudice is like, and here's why Mr. Collins gets the estate. Right,
yeah.
So you understand?
Yes.
Whereas I think a lot of readers, if they're not familiar with the time period, are like, why is their cousin, like, he has kids. Why doesn't he get it? Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't even, does the novel even, well, the novel says that it's entailed.
Yeah. I think it's just like it's entailed to him.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're like, I feel like the novel is like, you know, it's like, you know, the world is sexist. Like,
yeah. Like, I don't need to explain this to you.
Like, or it's every version of Sense and Sensibility is like, ah, perfect. Margaret Dashwood she can, like, be the surrogate for the audience because yes. She's a little child.
Yeah. And she's, like, barely there in the novel, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great because they can, basically we can just add a bunch of lines to where she's like, explain the world to me.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, in both Sense and Sensibility adaptations that yeah. I can think of, that's kind of what they did with the Margaret character. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting.
It's also good because it, yeah, when I every time I read Sense and Sensibility, I forget. I was like, oh, Margaret's barely in this.
Yeah, she's barely in it.
like
she's just kind of there.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I get what the movie versions were. Like, we got to give her something to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because she's, what, 12, I think?
I think so.
Yeah, so.
And I get, like, why that's, like, not the biggest, like, thing in a book. But I think it's more noticeable in a movie because the character is there. She's just not saying anything there. She's mm-hmm. like, Margaret's doing something.
Right.
But in a movie, because she's physically present, it's weird that she's not, that she doesn't say anything.
Right. Yeah.
It just, there are, yeah, there are things that are more awkward in, like, a visual medium that just, like, aren't awkward in the, like, written word. I'm trying to think of things. Oh, yeah, I thought about, like, what would I say for favorite book. But I told you my favorite book was Emma, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was, like, it's funny, because I had, like, top two picked out and then was, like, debating what the third one would be.
Okay.
What were the top two? Well, the top two would be Emma and then The Princess Diaries, which is my most reread book of all time. I have a copy I've had since I was 12 that is literally being held together like my packing tape now.
Aww. Yes, I loved those two. I think that was like the first book series that I ever like followed like in real time. Like I had to buy the newest book as it came out. That was the first book series I ever did that with.
Some of them were definitely, because when I first got the books, I was like 12 and it was a box set that had the first three.
And yeah, I had the same one.
The pictures don't have the covers don't have Anne Hathaway on them, but they do say now a major motion picture.
Okay, nice.
But yeah, they are paperbacks that are falling apart now.
Mm.
And then I think for a long time I would have said like Harry Potter for like number three, but recently Harry Potter, like, oh, I'm sure you know that's mm-hmm. gotten weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also like why
I was never a fan, but I feel for the fans. that really sucks.
Lucky you. I don't know. It's like weird because I was like, why does this have to be the thing I like that also I know a bunch of people because of?
Right. Yeah.
It's weird because my brother asked me, like, so what do you think about all this? And I was like, I don't know. I guess she's trash. Like, right. That's not great.
Yeah, it's tough. And I think kind of Lindsay Ellis, who we talked about before, she did a video on it. I don't know if you saw that.
I haven't watched the video yet, okay. But I did. Yeah, I know it was talking about, like, death of the author maybe doesn't work as well when she can still make money off of it.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'm glad I already own all the books and probably will not purchase other copies of
them. Sure. Yeah. Well, and she also kind of talks about how, like, death of the author only really applies when you're looking at, like, the intent or the message of the work itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it can get, like, kind of complicated. But, yeah, she... Yeah. Yeah, that was a really good video. I actually kind of want to rewatch it.
Yeah, Yeah, she's so good. I've watched her since, like, back in the, like, nostalgia chick days.
Oh, yeah. Nostalgic woman.
Yeah. I feel like she's kind of one of the first people doing more, like, film analysis as opposed to, let's just tell jokes.
Right, yeah. Yeah. I loved her whole series on film theory, but using the Transformers movies as examples.
Okay, well, in her book, in one of the acknowledgement things, it says, like at the end of the book, it was like, I want to thank President Ronald Reagan for deregulating children's TV in the 80s, because without him, Transformers wouldn't exist. And it made me laugh so hard, because I was like, I love how much she loves Transformers. Uh-huh. I just love it, because it's just like, it's some things I have all these really serious interests and I can relate to. It's like, it's some things I like goofy stuff from my childhood.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't trust people who don't still like the goofy things from their childhood. I'm like, it's like, you can't just like serious things.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, do you have no joy in your life?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I also, like... That's what I feel about the Transformers videos, is I feel the people who can make the best jokes about something are fans of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the recent Twilight jokes made by people who actually enjoy Twilight are way funnier than any joke someone was like, Twilight's for, like, teenage girls, and I'm better than that.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, the people who are really into Twilight, I was like, those jokes are so much funnier because they're so much more, like, specific and...
Uh-huh. Yeah, and there's kind of, like, an element of, like, you can't make fun of it unless, like, you're... It's kind of like how nobody else can make fun of your sibling but you.
Yes,
it's kind of that thing. Like, if you're not one of us, you can't roast this. Yeah.
I once described the show, Once Upon a Time, which is a show I absolutely love. I once described it as, it's trash, but it's my trash.
Yes, absolutely. Like, yes. It's trash, but it's my trash. Yeah.
Yeah. I have this book, The Doll People, which is by Anna Martin and Laura Goodwin.
Oh. Is that the Babysitter's Club author?
Yes, it is the Babysitter's Club author, and it's illustrated by Brian Selznick, who did, like, I think that's definitely his last name. That might not be his first name. But he also, he wrote, like, the book The Invention of Hugo Cabré, and I really like his illustrations a lot. But, yeah, I don't know, the Invention of Hugo Cabré is a book that, like, all the dialogue is written instead of descriptions, it's his illustrations.
Okay.
But it's, like, a chapter book.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically, like, half, and it's about movies, so, like, it's basically, like, half a movie, half a book. And I really like his style. It's, like, this weird, like, sketch style, but, like, also kind, like, highly realistic, but it's just with pencil. Enough that, like, I would be looking at books, and I'd be like, he's the illustrator, I'll look at him, I'm correct, like.
Yeah.
So I always thought it was cool to have, like, books, like, that weren't for, like, little kids, but still had, like, illustrations I thought were cool. So it's like, just really because neat. You're older doesn't mean you don't appreciate art. Like,
I think that's, you know, kind of sort of the draw of, like, graphic novels, is that it's still a visual way to tell a story. I think one of my favorite illustrators is Carson Ellis, who she did the art for the Emma album, actually. Like the poster.
What else has she done? Because, like, that poster's great.
Yeah. She's illustrated a lot of, like picture books. There's also, there's a middle grade novel that she collaborated on with Colin Malloy. And it's called, it's also, a, there's a, I think there's two other books in this series, but it's called Wildwood, and it's a middle grade, and it's kind of that like classic middle grade genre where like a group of children go on adventures together. But she, but there's illustrations throughout the book by Carson Ellis.
That sounds so cool. I'm like Googling it now.
I just absolutely love her art style. There's another book of hers that she actually wrote the text for as well, called Home, that I used to read all the time when I was a preschool teacher. Really spare text, but then like these really rich illustrations.
I love that. I love reading, and I love like getting, like imagining stuff. But I was like, I do sometimes miss like having like a picture to go along with it. To I want to see like what exactly the author was imagining.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think you're right. I think that just because we're grown-ups and we can read doesn't mean that we don't want to see pictures.
Yeah. I was like, also, pictures are pretty. Like, yeah. I just want pretty things. It can be, like, I feel like also it can really help with, like, showing, like, the theme of, a like, or, like, repeating stuff when you can, like, visually see, like, what's being repeated. Because I've tried to do this in writing where I'm, like, trying to draw parallels between these two scenes. And I was like, besides, like, wording them the same way, like, it'd be easier if I was, like, because I'm imagining them in the same position, but, like, that can be really hard to, like, put into words.
Right. Yeah. Very interesting. This is not at all the direction I thought this conversation would turn, but I love it.
And I'm just like, I want more grown-up picture books.
Yes. We absolutely need grown-up picture books. I can, like, get on board with that.
And I was like, we're all tired.
Yeah.
And we just, I mean, I think it's my friend and I were talking about, like, especially like right now, we keep like regressing to things we were like doing in middle school and high school. Like, for me, Jane Austen, at the time I was rewatching the TV show Psych, which I love, but it was on for 8 years, and those 8 years for me happened to be middle school to college.
Okay.
Enough that, like, and then my friend was like, sorry, because of Midnight Sun, was like rereading Twilight, uh-huh. And I was just like, regressing to 13, great.
Yes.
Like, but like, and there's like, it's funny because people are like, isn't that weird? And I was like, it's not, I was like, that weird, and it's nice to go back to something simpler, and you kind of get more things out of it, I feel like, when you return. Like, there's definitely books I've reread as an adult that I, like, appreciate different characters more, or I relate to different characters more. Like, you know, you're older, you reread a book from your childhood, and you're starting to relate to, like, the teachers and the parents?
Yes.
And you're like, oh, no. I make this joke about the Looking for Alaska miniseries.
Oh, okay.
I was watching it, and then they're like, the teacher character, he's called the Eagle, because that's what they call him, because he has like an eagle eye on everyone. And then I was like watching it, I was like, I'm relating to him so much more than these teenagers now. And I was just like, he's just trying to keep all these children safe.
Yeah, I recently reread Ella Enchanted. And yeah, that was the same thing. I found myself relating to Mandy, the cook. I was like, oh my gosh, this is who I've turned into. Yeah. Well, to close out, if you could recommend just one book to listeners, I know this is probably going to be a really tough choice, but
I've read this at the beginning of quarantine, and a lot of people have already read it. It's a very popular book, but Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Oh, yeah. That one's been on my list.
Really, really good. And I love that I was able to find some romance that wasn't straight. And, like, I like that it, honestly, if that I was able to read like a queer romance that like wasn't fan fiction. Sure. And I love fan fiction, but I love the idea of like people being able to find representation in like a more traditionally published book. Mm-hmm. And it also like, I also really liked the characters, and I mean, it's the idea is it's the like first son and the, one of the princes of Wales falling in love, and what's mm-hmm. not and not to love about that?
Sure.
Also, it does kind of have like an enemies to lovers thing. If like so, can't recommend anything with that more. And I knew I'd find it cute, but it was also like really well written, and I think dealt with like different aspects of growing up.
Sure.
And coming out in like ways I like as a straight person hadn't considered.
Uh-huh.
And so like I was like happy to get like that different perspective.
Yeah. That's great. That's been on my list pretty much since I heard of it, but that's, you know, one of those ones that it just stays on your TBR. Mm-hmm. thank you so much for stopping by. It was a pleasure to finally get to meet you and chat.
This is great.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll be able to connect again soon.
Yeah, I would love that.
Thanks again to Rachel Amber Bloom for joining me for this reader chat. You can follow Rachel on Twitter at dramadork884. And you can find links to all the topics we discussed, as well as a list of all the books that we talked about at rondawithabook.com. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and get exclusive bonus content through my Patreon. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy reading! Are you looking for your next great read, but stumped on where to find it? Let me be your book fairy godmother. When you join Rhonda with a Book on Patreon for $5 a month, I will send you a personalized book recommendation, plus my All Things Bookish newsletter every month, and give you a shout out and plug your project here on the podcast. If you're on a budget, no worries. For only a dollar a month, you can get just the newsletter, which includes exclusive content not found on the blog, and a collection of links to articles, stories, and products book nerds will love, curated by yours truly. Go to patreon.com/rondawithabook to join. Thanks so much for your support, and as always, happy reading.